This is The View from Tab. I'm Jim Minnick.
I'm John Cruz.
I'm Chris Palmer.
And I'm Mike Beats.
And it has been weeks and weeks since we've gotten together and talked. The holidays have taken place, so presumably there's a lot of things that we can talk about. We said that's what I would say. So
I will censor myself from giving a full report on the Menick family Christmas.
Menick family Christmas.
I had to join.
We had. Here's the thing. I love this. So you get Legos. Legos are the most creative tools known to man. What does Cruz make? Flags. You know, everybody else making spaceships, mangers. They were making a manger. They had wise men and babies and virgins, you know, all this stuff. And he's making flags.
They make virgins? Virgins? How could you tell?
All right.
My flags are
wonderful.
Legos? Who received these Legos for Christmas?
Well, no, I keep these around. I mean, these are the Legos that we have available at any time. The Legos that Kate had growing up, we can't find. They're up there in the attic somewhere with the comic books that I can't find that my mother threw out. I mean, all this kind of stuff.
Actually, you know? I was given a number of exciting gifts by the Menicks, but I should note that Miss Menick, Katie Menick, gave me her first place JV Bronx Science MHL.
Oh, and did you squeal like a girl when she gave it to you?
I sort of did, but then there was a point where I wasn't really sure if this was a real gift or not. And I thought, what if I take it and then she's like weirded out that I just took this trophy?
But I think she now would be perfectly okay with you taking the trophy, actually.
Well, she did take the trophy, so I hope she was.
Given that you walk into tournaments, see some trophies and be like, I'm going to take those. I've seen you do this at Woodward.
Yeah, somehow I think that you care about that trophy far, far more than Katie does at this point.
Well, but it's up in the attic, so I assume yes. But
yeah, well, stuff goes up in the attic, no question about it.
But I was going to say, I gave a bunch of Legos to my niece, but she's 7, and so that's a lot more understandable.
No, Legos, well, if she's making flags, it's understandable, but I'm sure she was making better stuff than John was.
You totally appreciated my flag for
I appreciated your knowledge of the flags of many nations. I grant you that.
Thanks.
But your mechanical skills are sadly lacking.
That.
Once you start with Legos, you never stop.
I'm sorry. You know, I just screwed up. Okay, why are we talking about this anyway?
Well, it's been a long time. We have obviously nothing to say, and we're going to say it at great length. The other thing I've noticed is that John has been putting up his pictures of our summer vacation on Facebook. It took you long enough.
It took me half a year, but that's okay.
Until the next vacation, which is fair.
Yep. It's okay. You got to spice things up.
That's true. It's nice to see them again. Nice to see our trip to Walt Disney World being replayed. So anyway, in the debate world, which is the only reason people could possibly want to hear what we're talking about, the what has transpired, I guess, is Blake transpired.
Yes.
Since the the three of you went to Blake,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So now, Chris, this was your first time. That was the thing. So what was your? I mean, John is always telling me I have to go to Blake. He loves Blake. Telling me I always have to go to Blake.
Sure.
And so, what was your thoughts on this one?
I had a very nice weekend. I appreciated the extent to which they clearly understand that they are a tournament in Minnesota in December, because at no point was it really necessary for me to put shoes on. It's a very sort of comfortable experience as you go through the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the one time I did go outside, it was 3 degrees outside, but you know, you expect that. You go into that eyes wide open. But no, it was a very well-run tournament. The judging was good. The hospitality was good. I was, and then one of the things too about putting it in a hotel that I don't think, you know, we appreciate enough is that the furniture and the surroundings in a hotel are a good deal more comfortable than a high school. You know, you're not sitting on
where
this,
are the rounds?
They're either in conference rooms or in they rent out like 3 rooms worth of like hotel rooms, bedrooms.
Right, and they convert those bedrooms into debate rooms.
So it's not like you're laying on the bed trying to flow.
No, the kids have tables, and the judge setup is a little less ideal. But I flow my computer anyway, so it didn't affect me any. So the judges basically get an end table and the kids get the desk or a table they bring in.
Right.
And it worked perfectly fine. There was no problem there. And the other nice thing about that is there's a bathroom right there, and there's a little thing where you can get glasses of water right there. So I understand that a lot of the tournament layout is due to necessity and not really planning on their part. But that all said, it combines to make for a very pleasant and nice weekend.
Yeah, definitely.
So.
I mean, I assume they get a good rate on the hotels and everything, so it's not that expensive aside from
getting there. I'm just guessing that Minnesota in December is not, you know, a top travel destination. I mean, I assume that must be the case because it's amazing how much of that hotel.
Why would you assume anything like that?
Yeah,
but it's actually remarkable how much of the hotel is taken over by the debate terms. Like, it's a huge hotel.
You don't see anybody there but us. So
that's right, and I think that it becomes a little more busy when we're closer to, like, this year. We happen to be a full week away from Christmas. I think on the years where it's closer to Christmas, it's a little more full. And plus, if the Vikings are doing well, it's also a lot more full.
Which was no fear this year.
If there's a home game, right?
So.
So yeah. Then otherwise, you know, the place is crawling with Vikings fans and so on. But now, I mean, the cool thing is that you also get to see all the people dressing up for the Holidazzle parade.
Yes, that was very adorable.
Wait a second, what is that?
They have a parade.
This is how we're going to get Jim to come. He would do this.
Oh, you would love it.
Well, okay, so the Holidazzle runs, I think, from what you would call Black Friday. So the day after Thanksgiving all the way until Christmas Day. Every night, there's a parade down the Nicollet Mall, which is this. You can't drive on it. It's just this outdoor, you know, it's a mall in the traditional sense. And it originates at the Hyatt Hotel. So it's a parade where kids are dressed up as, I don't know, Santa Claus. And I actually saw none of it this year because I was in the tab room the entire time. But they dress up and it's a huge parade and you get to be in the parade. You can just sign up to be in the parade and they give you your outfit and you go and get fitted and you put it on, you get to walk in the parade. It's very festive,
and it is so sincerely adorable in that way that only Minnesota could pull off, that even Joe Vaughn is charmed by it. It managed to, like, remove the cynicism from Joe Vaughn.
Well, this I have to see.
It really is an excellent tournament. I mean, in many ways I consider Blake to really set the standard for so many different things, and it's an excellent tournament.
I mean, this year was huge.
Yeah.
We broke to triples after six rounds, and there were
still left
twos.
A couple 4-2s. Yeah,
I think it left like 13 4-2s that you can create or something like that.
Was that many?
So I think next year, I'm trying to convince Shane to go to 8 rounds because no major tournament's doing it anymore since Berkeley stopped doing it, and I think maybe even Harvard used to do it too. But no major tournament's doing 8 rounds anymore, and they could do it. We could just start a little bit earlier on. We could start a little bit earlier on Friday because we don't start till noon currently, or 1.
Right.
Everybody's
we could
there,
add,
so it's not
yeah,
like
we
that.
Could add a round on Friday morning, and I said we could move Octos on to Sunday do an 8-round term. That would be awesome at the beginning of a topic to get 8 rounds in.
We all like this, but you go out there and talk to the kids and everything. No, fewer rounds.
But, you know, I'm going to tell you, with all due respect,
or maybe it's just my kids.
I don't mean to call out Sophie, but Sophie is very consistently in elimination rounds, so it's understandable that she perhaps would say, "I want fewer rounds."
Now, other people are saying it too, but granted, she starts it. You know, I mean, she's like, "Oh no, oh no, let's just have that,
well,
breaks. Let's skip the
out.
Prelims." You know.
Well, there's also a safety in having fewer rounds because I mean, if we make it so you have to be 6-2 to clear, That's tough.
Yeah.
Especially kid who goes 0-2 in presets and rides on the bubble all the way. Yeah.
Look, I've never experienced an 8-round tournament, so I can't speak to that. But 7 rounds definitely makes sense to me in a tournament of that size. I mean, it's, you know,
we did that at Princeton, right? We did 7 rounds.
Right, and Princeton was smaller, right? We did, you know, did it at Bronx. We did it at tournament.
But the part of the, being the thing we've talked about before, which is breaking all the people who have won all but 2 rounds. Yeah.
When I brought up going to 7 rounds, someone, I forget who it was, and VBT does it, they said, given, okay, this is sort of tangentially related, but I posted on VBD the number, the percentage of ballot wins that took place in elims by affirmatives. In the triple octa round, affirmatives only won 8% of ballots. In the double octa final round, affirmatives only won 8% of ballots. Given that, how can a tournament be fair with seven rounds, given how when two debaters who are fairly equally matched debate each other, which happens in that seventh round because it's almost a pure power, and the negative wins so much in those rounds, how is it fair to break after an odd number round?
Yeah, I see your point.
Well, you could do, but I guess it wouldn't necessarily solve that problem. Ignore what I was just saying. Sorry.
The problem is, I mean, there's a logistical problem to having eight rounds. I mean, it's more likely you're going to have six rounds than eight rounds. But, it's just how many places can you go where you have that much time to be able to have that many rounds? And, presumably you have to have a requisite number of break rounds to go along with it. I mean, you're not going to break to octos if you have eight prelims, so.
So what do you think would be a better solution, a six rounds and then a runoff?
No, I'm not saying, I'm just
saying. No.
I don't know, but I mean, I had a very difficult time answering that back, given how, I mean, I don't think it's getting better. I don't think it's getting any better for the affirmative, even with the committee trying to, make topics, with this topic even, where they've given the affirmative basically intuition on a platter because most affirmatives are able to win the argument that the negative doesn't have to defend punishment, or that the affirmative doesn't have to defend punish the same. Just the trial, they're treated the same, and negatives are still crushing on it.
That suggests a wider problem that can't be fixed by just adding prelims, though. I mean,
that's right. I mean, it seems to be that there needs to be some structural change to how we're doing this, because it's not even about topic wording either. Because
I've always wondered. I'm sorry, go ahead, finish your stuff.
On this topic, it should be slam dunk wins for the affirmative. It really should. And it might be a little bit that affirmatives are not taking advantage of whatever framework they could be doing or anything like that. But it really should be, because, like I said, at least in reading ballots at Blake, it seemed like a lot of judges were buying the notion that the affirmative only has to defend the trial portion of the two, which, in the past, where the negative has won most of the time is by, winning that the punishment should be different. But it seems like that affirmatives are winning that the punishment can go back to a separate system, but they're still losing a vast majority of the the evenly matched rounds.
I've always wondered what would happen if we took... And if we were to take a tournament and I've thought about trying this at one of these venues and shave a minute off the AC and stick it on the 1AR and see if that helps.
That's been proposed before. Isn't that what the Iowa Round Robin did 1 year?
No, the Iowa Caucus used to do that. Actually, every year the Iowa Caucus did that at their tournament. The big problem is that what actually happened is, affirmatives weren't changing how they were doing it, because what would usually happen is we would show up at the tournament and be like, oh, shit. We got to cut these afs because we forgot that it's going down to 5 minutes. So you just cut and you don't really think about it too strategically, and that's that. I think that it would have to be, for the experiment to be worthwhile, I think you would have to take a full year of all four topics or all five topics, doing this take a minute off the 1AC and put it in the 1AR. Because the issue to me, I mean, it has all to do with strategic choice, or how much of your round gets to be dedicated to in-round strategic choice. And right now, 6 of the 13 minutes, the affirmative gets no in-round strategic choice because that's all pre-done. And the negative gets 13 minutes of strategic choice in the round. So to give the affirmative, to some extent, I could even see taking 2 minutes off the 1AC and putting it in the 1AR. But a lot of people have said no way, because then the affirmative would be very shady in the 1AR or whatever. They could basically reread their case or whatever.
My more radical thought is actually to use something like PF timings, where each kid gives all the speeches and you have like a symmetric balanced out round. Two constructive.
Coin flip too.
There's no
I'm not joking around about that.
The asymmetry.
But the asymmetry of the LD times is sort of an anachronism there. I don't know of any other format of debate.
Oh, sure.
A policy does it because they have the negative block in the middle.
Right, that's what that's modeled after without really having the negative, you know.
It's
right.
Also modeled after letting the affirmative speak first and last because, you know, it's that notion is based on the fact that the affirmative has a burden of proof.
Right.
So that's why they get to speak first and they get to speak last. Right. But in Lincoln Douglas, well, you know, the reason why a lot of negatives win is because they do say the affirmative has a burden of proof.
Yeah. It's not necessarily true, but it's there. But yeah. I don't know. I feel like having an affirmative constructive after any potential counterplan would remove a lot of unfairness and also a lot of theory, I feel.
Yeah, if you were to shorten up, I mean, if you were to, with that, I mean, I think, well, first of all, I think we have to give up the idea that two LD rounds fit in the time of a policy round. It just does not. That is just not the case anymore when it comes to flighting. I mean, given how long decisions take now, especially in the really high-powered rounds, you know, that there's coaching between rounds, that there's longer RFDs between rounds. It's just not true that two LD rounds fit in the time of the policy round. If that's the case, then I could see adding maybe, you know, maybe saying 4-minute 1AC, 4-minute 1NC, then give them each like 3-minute constructives again, and then go into the rebuttals so that they can flesh out sort of this is what the round's going to be about in constructive time, and then the negative, well, and then have, you know, each get a rebuttal to sort of summarize everything or weigh arguments and stuff.
Yeah, something like a 4-4-3 or a 4-3-4 or something like that would make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I've talked to, you know, Scott and Charian about it, and, you know, they've said put together a proposal, and it just, you know, that's something... You would need some radical thinkers on the executive board to get it passed, I think. But
I think you're right. You'd have to have some place to test it out over a long term.
Yeah, you'd have to, like, dedicate a whole topic to it or something in an area of the country.
Because you can't evaluate it just once, you know? You want to see what happens when people are planning for it and working at it.
Well, and it also needs to be enough of a block that people actually strategize for it rather than just after thinking it, you know? It has to be something that you go in thinking about that you're going to adjust your strategy for it.
And it would be on a whole case low, I mean, 2 months rather than one tournament in that 2 months.
I mean, if you could get, like, for example... the tournaments of November, December, because at least then you'll have not be teaching novices, you know, new stuff that you haven't done yourself. But if you took the, you know, November, December topic, it's short, but there's some major tournaments on it. And you just said, we're going to try out this new thing. Was every tournament please agree to do this? You know, the tournaments that, you know, sort of abide by NFL rules, like the Minneapolis always does and Glen Brooks always does. And just said, you know, we'd like to give this a try. Would you agree to participate in this? And, you know, I think that would be because then you would at least, and then say that you're going to do that in, you know, August, so that people, when the topic comes out on October 1, people have thought about how they're going to structure stuff and so on, given the new times and case right and so on.
So what would be the total length of the round in your mind?
Well, you do the same 13 minutes, I think. You just chop it up differently, or maybe add a minute. Yeah,
I think you could do. I think you could do something like four. I think that the name. I don't have a.
Maybe 4-5-4 or something.
Yeah, 4-5-4, and then but maybe for the negative, you do it 5-4-4 or something like that.
Yeah.
Because you do kind of got to give the negative a little bit more time in the first speech because I think you want to let them establish their own. Well, although policy doesn't give it any more time. So.
No, the Nick just reads their thing, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know about giving the negative the last word, though. I mean, that seems to diminish some of the advantage of giving the, you know, trying to even out the playing field for the affirmative is by giving the negative the last word. I think that might be not a great thing, especially because the negative can run still run. Like, we wouldn't change the mindset of judges, so negatives could still run very sort of skeptical positions or positions that don't necessarily have offense to win, that are just sort of questioning the affirmatives, whether they've met their burden of proof. As long as we still have a large percentage of judges that are willing to vote on those sorts of arguments, then I think that you would still want to let the affirmative speak last.
Right, but there's no
reason.
It'd
be interesting. It would definitely be interesting to try that out. What other kinds of format changes have been proposed? Because, you know, it's funny. I have this collection of old rostrums that I've thumbed through where it's pretty amazing to see similar objections and questions about the time and format coming up so long ago. Like, there are articles. I had this article from Pam Katie Wyckoff when she was Pam Katie. That I think is from 1989 or 1990, that is already addressing some of these issues then, you know, 20 years ago, already foreseeing, I mean, obviously not necessarily the influx of things that were not considered part of the LGBT debate at the time, but an understanding of these problems occurring that early on, right, and a perceived negative advantage, which I thought was kind of fascinating.
Well, policy sort of added a minute onto its rebuttals from the ground up. I mean, the NFL, I believe, was the last people to put that back in place after they added the 5-minute rebuttals. And so,
Well, and the last change that NFL made to times was, well, they sort of granted this flex prep thing, which I think sort of fizzled. I mean, someone asks if they want to use flex prep now, I'm like, most people, I think, want to see a full cross-examination and don't mind there being questions during your
prep. The NFL didn't grant it. The NFL said that it would be okay testing it, but then... I mean, I was on that committee, and then it was like 100% against it in the end, at least for NFL stuff.
Yeah, okay. But at least they tested it.
Right, of course, there's a test. And then there was also the other thing that we proposed on that committee that I was really glad to see change was the increase in prep time. And I mean, at Bronx, we get 5 minutes of prep time. And I think that, I mean, I personally think that that's a good thing. But certainly 4 minutes. I mean, a few tournaments I go to that still have 3 minutes of prep time, I consider that to be so completely ridiculous.
One or two other tournaments
still have three.
Well, I think in policy debate, the national circuit's pretty much gone to 10 minutes of prep, I think. And it just makes sense then that LD would go to 5. But although I think the NFL rules, it's still 8 minutes of prep in policy.
I believe it is.
I think that sounds right.
Yeah, so, I mean, it'll be... I would like to see these changes happen, but of course, you know, someone's got to put together this proposal, and
these are hard changes to make happen. Really,
yeah, especially because there's a lot of just internal. There's just inertia.
Yeah, everybody, you're entrenched in what it is that we do.
And that we even had that problem with prep time, which you would think would be the easiest thing to.
Yeah, prep is sort of inconsequential.
Oh yeah, but
and
people,
everybody benefits and.
I mean, there were
lot of it might be dependent on how many ballots the NFL already has printed out with the times on it.
Well, I'll tell you actually when an objection came up, because this would be the objection I can imagine coming up with this, is that the reaction, and I mean this with all due respect, but this to me was just so stupid. Like, the reaction that people gave when I said the thing about prep time was, that's just going to make it into more like policy. And I said, well, what does that mean? And they said, well, now they're going to have more time to find the evidence to read and whatnot. I said, huh? Right, it's like, okay, so, I mean, to me, that's just so silly. Like,
it seems like the shorter you make prep time, the more...
Exactly.
Because you would write, you would just be reading more blocks.
Exactly. You'd have less time to think about what you're saying. So the only objection I really... The only knee-jerk reaction I can see is somebody saying that restructuring this theoretically supports a particular style of debate. But I don't think that's true at all.
I feel to some extent that it's going to just turn into policy is like the people who don't like change very much is version of the Republicans who say it's going to lead to socialism. It's just what they fling out no matter what you say, and you just got to believe, you know, move on.
Right. It's just not even, honestly, I it's not even worth engaging a conversation with that answer. It just isn't. I mean, it doesn't. Just say okay and then walk away.
Well, yeah, I mean, yes.
All right. I think.
Should we
talk
about Blake some more?
If you want to talk about Blake would be good. I mean, well, you guys were all Blake. I had to run a tournament with Cheryl, and Cheryl wasn't even there.
That was because it was you and Matt Vinay. Don't cut him out of this story.
No, but I was going to say Matt became, Matt had already been seconded to it. And Cheryl got delayed because her bus didn't show up. So I'm there registering all the forget policy. I mean, half of them don't show up, and the other half have a different name than they had when they signed up, and all this kind of stuff.
My kids, thank you.
Well, you know, I actually two things on that issue. I'm just right now, before we started, was drafting my email to coaches about how names are due on Friday. Judge names are due Friday. And then I was going to put in there, I know a lot of you are just going to put placeholders in here.
Yeah.
Right? I'm going to charge them for name changes, but any time between any name change that happens between Friday at 5 p.m. and whenever we open MJP, any name change immediately.
For a judge or for kids?
Judge. That's a $50. And then any name change that happens after the MJP comes out, you're just going to be charged as if you're not bringing a judge.
Well, oh, that's what we could. Yeah, we wouldn't take a name change. You can't take a name change once it starts because then it's all thrown off.
That was the policy at Bronx.
MJP is closed the minute it opens. If you have a judge that you want to change or you drop your judge, you lose all your preferences. Everybody is a one and you don't get any strikes because that works. That's the only thing that works.
I charged a fine at Bronx.
We didn't charge.
I'm thinking of charging the full amount that we charge for a higher judge.
Yeah, we did that at Yale.
I tell you, there's the threat of not having any strikes and not having any preferences whatsoever works more. Yep. You can fine them $1 million. Forget about it. They'll just pay the money, but tell them no, you don't get – then
– Well, I frankly think you should do both.
I have nothing against doing both, but it's the other thing. It's saying if, in fact, you change a judge – and Yale, I think we had one judge – like got run over by a bus and we allowed that.
A legitimate excuse.
Yeah, and there was really like two. There was only one or two. And everybody else was exactly the people they said they were going to be. There were no changes whatsoever, which meant that, the people were getting the tournament they want because the people who do this screwing up are screwing it up for everybody else.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's ridiculous. And you just punish them enormously. But it's punishing them by saying, okay, no strikes, no preferences. It makes your job, it sort of makes it a lot easier, for you if everybody's a one, so.
Well, the other thing is I think that sometimes being harsh with things like that is actually much fairer because it's clear that everyone is going to be treated the same way. Yeah.
As we said before, it's always the same people or the same, it's the usual suspects that do this kind of thing.
Right.
But this is pretty.
But on the other hand, I think that, like, we had a problem with part of our Glenbrooks registration, right? And, the first thing I said to Tara was, please find me, actually, because I know that this kind of situation would drive me crazy if I were a tournament director, right? Like, and I think it's only fair that the tournament, people be held to the rules of the tournament that they go to. Right, so I think that that's totally fair.
Okay, so I'm going to say that the fine is going to be if they don't bring a judge, it's going to be the cost of what it would be to hire the judge, and no strikes.
I tell them not to bring. If you're changing your judge, don't bring a judge. Don't bring him.
We are running public forums, so what I'll say is that you're going to be charged as much. But if we use your judge in public forum, I'll refund. Some of that back.
Yeah, actually, that
the real punishment though is the no strikes and all at once.
Yeah,
and you do it. Yeah, absolutely. You won't have to do it because that'll scare. That really does because they know you will. That's the thing. It's not one. It isn't an empty threat.
On the other hand, Jim, I don't know if it was entirely. I think the two together might have done it because
it might be the two together.
Even with that being a big threat to something, something like about a quarter of the schools at Yale did not do strikes or preferences at all.
Right, and there are always schools that don't do that. So that's true.
Yeah, and so they don't give a crap if you take their strikes away. They weren't doing them in the first place.
Yeah, but I think they're also the schools that are coming with
Yale might be a little bit different than VBT or Bronx.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, almost everyone filled out their preferences. However, I still think I think a combination makes the most sense because that.
Yeah,
way
I would do the combination, but I think that the one is more important than the other. I mean, having the fine is fine, but having the other thing really is going to force them because I've seen people come and they'll just say, "Here's some money."
I have a thought about Yale next year too that I've been toying around very seriously in my head lately because, I mean, Jim has noticed this, and I don't know if the other two of you have noticed this too, but this year it seems to be a little worse than it's been in a while. I mean, we're more angry about all the changes and shenanigans that happen at the registration table, or there's more of them coming in. But it definitely seems like it's getting worse and not better. Is that fair?
I feel that way. I mean, absolutely.
Yeah. So I've been thinking that next year, The thing Yale doesn't need is money. I mean, the fines we collect are just really irritating.
Chris, and you told me this before.
Stocks. You're going to put them in the stocks.
I wish. There's a New England tradition for you. Yeah. No, Yale, we don't even – it takes more of my time to track down the damn fines than they're even worth. I mean, the money – I don't care about the money. The Yale kids don't care about the money. That's not the point of the fine, and we don't want the money. But the thing that is true of Yale is that it is a highly oversubscribed tournament every year. We're about a third, again, the size of the entry, are kids who wish to come to the tournament and cannot. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I've given serious thought to just playing blatant favorites and just waitlisting everybody. And how many slots and how soon you get those slots is based purely on how well you have performed as a citizen at that tournament in the past. And if you drop a judge at the last minute with no good reason the year before, then next year you're getting three LDers. You're not getting five. And if you keep doing it, well, then you need to find something else to do that weekend. Because the only real currency we have that anybody seems to respect is getting into the tournament. And if we take that and make that the incentive to be a good citizen, then the problem will either, you know, go away and people will pony up, or they won't be welcome at the tournament. And so the problem solves itself.
Well, I unofficially did that this year. I mean, people that bring people that bring their parents to judge in Varsity LD at an Octos tournament, I sort of was like, maybe I'll let this other team in before you because I know they're going to bring a good judge. You know, I think that the good citizen thing goes a long way, because there are teams who don't have a coach but still consistently bring good, you know, they find good judges to bring. You know, they at least make an effort to bring a judge, or they'll bring a parent plus a judge. But the people who are just like, I'm going to bring my mom and they're going to cover my spot, and because she's also the chaperone, that's just not putting forth any effort. I mean, you're not contributing to the tournament. Well,
and with the independent entry kiddos, I'm not going to paint all teenagers with the same brush here, but the one thing that you do run up against when there are certain programs that are largely run by the team themselves is that kid who's a senior really doesn't care if 4 or 5 years from now the program is not doing well because they didn't manage it well. But if you take their slots away right away for pulling shenanigans, then that affects that senior, and they have to get their act together and do it the right way now, because that hurts them.
There's a real discontinuity, whatever, with those schools, because those schools that run themselves, those kids don't come back as college kids and help out either. They're not judging. They're not giving back to the school because they didn't get anything out of the school. All they did was, you know, finagle the school to get themselves some slots. And when they're out, they're gone. You don't see those people back. I mean, those programs that repeatedly bring bad judging, because we have programs that are, you know, major enough programs. I mean, they have regular programs and they have, you know, whatever. They're there year in and year out, but the kids never come back. The coach isn't really involved. Whatever the case may be, there's different stories for each one. But those schools are regular problems. One of the things I've noticed, by the way, in the Tab Room program, I don't know how long you've been doing this, but I changed a judge today, and I noticed that there was a list of all the stuff that the judge had done in the past, other tournaments that they had been at. Is that a new thing?
Yeah, I did that over break.
Yeah, that's nice, good, huh? Because it was obviously retroactive, because this guy had like 5 tournaments or something that I took out and I put in somebody who had no tournaments, but that's okay.
That's cool.
So it was for public forum. No, it was for public forum and actually has judged a couple of tournaments. But nonetheless, I think that's a great thing, because a lot of the tournaments, knowing that that's there now, because some tournaments we have requirements, and yeah, I can look and say, well, yeah, no, this judge, I mean, who vouches for this judge that's never judged anywhere? How do I know this? It's fine that you have to start somewhere, and I'm perfectly willing with that, and we can help out.
Is that you start with a blank slate. Mm-hmm. I mean, if some school comes out of the blue, they're going to get their 5 slots, and they're going to be fine, and they're going to give it a chance to succeed or fail. It's the people who piss me off year after year.
But how do we track them? I mean, in such a way that is subjective. Well, I mean, than remembering
I don't care if it's subjective at this point. I don't give a crap if it's subjective. If you have risen to my attention in my ire, I will remember it and I will take it out on you.
That's true. I'm sitting there doing this now.
Chris runs the Ivy League tournament mafia. He can, I mean, he'll remember from Princeton, oh, Columbia.
And I have a good memory, and I'm vindictive, so let's go.
You're the perfect tab manager.
Part of your punishment needs to also be that you're going to CC the admissions of all those schools. when you slap them on the wrist, you're going
to
CC.
Well, that won't work because most of these kids aren't too stupid to get into Yale if they can't get a good judge. I mean,
I have no problem with tournaments sharing their thoughts about participants from other tournaments. Like I had a school that was just refusing to pay the money that they owed me for registering and never showing up, and finally I had to say, I run the tab room at X, Y, and Z tournaments, and I'm friends with the people who run X, Y, and Z tournaments, and you need to pay now or they're going to be notified about the crap that you're pulling with my tournament. And then they paid.
And we need to have a debate credit bureau where we can run.
And we've had this here in the Northeast, every tournament, if somebody pulls something at any tournament that's really serious, it's the same people. We've done this. I've had schools that say, no, you can't come until, you can't go anywhere until you pay the last one.
I sent out an email about 5-6 years ago suggesting we all do that, and not a single tournament director didn't think it was a good idea.
Yeah.
And so we all just sort of left it as an informal and spoken agreement, but it is there.
I mean, most people don't get that level of,
we only have to threaten it. You don't actually have to contact the other tournament directors.
But I mean, we have had one where we did in fact do that, and they finally ponied up. This was it was the second tournament of the year, and they ponied up to go to Lexington actually. So it took them months to do it, but they did it.
We need to leak a fake email that's being sent to all the tournament directors of all the major tournaments saying.
We've ruined the surprise.
You have the list of the people whose credit rating has gone below 400.
I'm sitting there now, like Chris says, I have some jurisdiction over who's going to get into Columbia, but it's just pulling people off the wait list, of course. But and I haven't been doing this, but because it's filled up, and we set up some parameters of how to pick people. You're just taking them off the top, the people who signed up first that didn't get in. But if I wanted to, I see a school there coming up, and I'm thinking, I don't want to see these people. These people are a pain in the neck. They're going to be the worst judges and all this kind of stuff. And I'm really, they haven't come up yet, and I'm waiting. I don't know how moral I will be when the time comes with those people. I know they're going to make the tournament a lesser tournament. Absolutely going to make it a lesser tournament. Should they come in when there's all these other people going to make it a better tournament? I mean, who is my responsibility to this school that screws up every tournament, or is it to the tournament itself and everybody else is going to be there? When I put it that way, it seems like a pretty logical choice what to
do. And you can also make the punishment fit the crime if you don't tie yourself down to. I made a point to somebody 2 years ago who was quoting bits and pieces of my invitation back at me. And I said to them, look, I'm not interested in language lawyering over an invitation that I wrote myself. I'm trying to come up with a fair outcome here. And I think that we probably, we could use a little bit more of that. I mean, for instance, if there's a school whose major sin is that they sign up for 20 slots 2 months before the tournament and then always drop the week before, well, the appropriate measure there is to put them all on the wait list and say, look, you have to send your check in. If once you get your check to me, I will take your slots off the wait list. But until then, I'm afraid that I can't give you slots.
Requires a lot of management, though, of registration. Mm-hmm. I don't know how we get that.
Yeah, but that management happens 2 months before the tournament, not 2 days before the tournament like it does now.
Yeah, and 2 months before, I got plenty of time to keep an eye on all this stuff.
We may have gotten a little babied by digital registration, because so many of the things that we would have had to do before Tab Room and Joy of Tournaments and things like that is basically done for us. So while obviously running a tournament is really stressful and there's a lot going on, I think that that's not too much extra work on the part of a tournament director, realistically. Because realistically, most tournament directors are checking the website for the tournament over and over again. They're looking at how things are
going.
I don't believe that. It's you. I know it's Jim before he gets to the turkey. I've watched him do it.
No, I keep a track of what's going on with my tournament.
I may be guilty as charged, but I think it applies to Medic as well, at least. I can speak to about Medic on this. I've seen him do it.
No, I do. I'd like to know who's signing up. But, if, you know, it's always the same people. But for some of these things, you know, like a national tournament, then it's a different thing. It's not the same people. Or it's the same people, plus there's all these other people as well. And it does warrant, I think, looking at it a little more closely. But the thing is, you're going to open this up. So short of having something, as you say, where you have, okay, everything is instantly on the wait list, and then we take you off the wait list, I don't know how much management you can do, or you have it set up in such a way that a school has a black mark. And if a school has a black mark, they're automatically waitlisted until you think about it.
I would love to log into a little black dot next to my school.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're,
no, I would,
you might as well just go out of the business.
Former. I would just waitlist everybody and then go in based on, you know, the earlier you get in is based on my confidence that you're not going to screw something up.
I've got to run in like 10 minutes, but I wanted to bring up one thing that I was talking to some of the coaches or some of the Tabroom people and other coaches at Blake, that people who sort of game the MJP system and rank knowing conflicts a one, people they know that should be conflicted, they give them a one, or judges who say, oh, I shouldn't judge this person once the ballot has already been listed. They didn't say that it was a conflict prior to the tournament,
okay.
And then they come up and be like, "Oh, I can't judge this person." Go ahead.
I want to specifically answer the last point. I assessed fines for that at Brock's.
You did?
I did, but I should have done it in a more organized manner, which is fair because somebody pointed that out to me because I actually forgot to ask Jim to keep track of that.
Yeah,
but
didn't.
I heard it.
But
myself,
wait, I'm not
but
sure.
I heard it myself from Matt Ross and Tyler Morris.
But what are we talking? I'm not clear on what we're saying.
Okay, so
Judge X says,
it's actually two issues.
Yeah.
A team is filling out their MJP.
Yeah.
Start with the second one though, actually, because I think
okay, start with the second one. A judge is put in a round to, for example, Cruz is put in a round to judge Dylan.
Okay.
Right.
Cruz walks up to the tab table and say, "Oh, I should be struck from Dylan, from judging Dylan. I should be conflicted from judging Dylan Schur."
Okay.
Now the tab room is like, "Okay, well, we can't. It's you know, it's probably it's a one or you know, it, Dylan's probably not a one or two down round, but it might be a one or two down round. So you got to find a good judge. You got to be scrambling, right?
This person's good judges have been used elsewhere in the tournament. They've been assigned to other rounds. I mean, regardless,
yeah, everything's already pre-assigned by now.
Correct.
Okay.
So on that issue, you have the judge who didn't do their job, but you also have the kid who must have given John Cruz a one, knowing that he should not judge him.
And therefore got an extra five, which is virtually a strike.
Exactly.
Right, exactly. I think that there should be most certainly, in my opinion, if a tournament offers the opportunity, and this is something that I really need to do at Bronx more. I didn't do it this year, but I like when tournaments give you as a final step of registration the conflict sheet, so now there's no excuse because the judge is being confronted with a list of competitors in the tournament, right? I think at that point you definitely find the judge because the school that the judge is affiliated with because it's selfish. It is selfish. It's just a selfish situation. And if the other person has truly given conflicts one, and it's
or
clearly
twos.
A pattern. Ones or twos or has ranked the conflict, I think that there's grounds for a fine there. Although I will say that sometimes there isn't a clear public agreement on what a conflict is.
Yeah.
But I think the tournament director has discretion on that. I really do.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think that you probably should punish publish what your definition of what a thing is. For example, I'm going to say that if you work with one person from a school, you can't judge anyone from that school.
I think that's right.
The drawback that one of the coaches brought up was that the drawback to the finding the judge is maybe what if they just take the round? What if Cruz just takes the round because he doesn't want to get fined?
Well, I also feel like part of the problem here is that the conflicts are mixed in with the rest of the MJP system. And so people are in a way punished for having more conflicts than other people.
That's right. I agree.
And
with
I
that.
Don't I mean, like that. You know, I don't like that your number of strikes determines that you have a lot of alumni who come back and judge, and therefore you have eight conflicts and not two. You know,
that's right.
I think that conflict should be separate from your, like I or like for example, and I don't want to brag, but like at Blake, I brought like five judges, all of who you know
right,
probably
sure.
got ones, and you know that was not our we went beyond our obligation to bring in good judges, and people that were going to judge the entire tournament. You know, we had to strike five people that we would normally be giving ones to. We had to give fives to. I see Chris's point of view. I just don't know how you would make that, because then the number of ones and twos you have to do would all be relative depending on
how many. But that's not too hard to program. I mean, that can be done.
Yeah.
So. It's just a percentage. Computers are good at these things. So.
I guess that's true, but I mean, to go back to your original point, I actually think that tournaments don't find you enough in many cases. I think there are a lot of
things. It's hard to do in the heat of battle. That's part of the problem.
That's right, because you're like, okay, we'll deal with this later, and then you're too tired.
Well, that's actually why I think that there is I make jokes about, and I love titles and pomp and circumstance, but I always make jokes about the ombudsperson and whatnot at the NFL. On the other hand, there is actually a value to having people who have these sort of arcane-sounding jobs, and having somebody who is like the assessor, I suppose, is actually not a bad idea, particularly in a big tournament where the tournament director has 1,000 things to do. And let's be honest, the tournament director, him or herself, probably doesn't want to be the one saying, "Hand me the money right now."
That's right. It should be someone else. It should be like in Minnesota, they used to, at almost every tournament I went to, they would say, "We have an ethics committee of three people," and that ethics committee is not three people who are running the tournament. You know, it's just three judges, or it's three coaches who we trust to, you know, that are going to make good decisions or whatever. But it's not the tournament director usually.
Well, that also works well. That works
because they don't have anything to gain from it.
When you do what Jim did at Hen Hut and just give the money away, it's not like it's going to the program.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know? There was really no argument against it. It's like the fines are going to charity.
Yeah, right. I had no compunctions about going up to people with the box.
But that also means that an outsider would have no compunctions either, and there'd be no insight. Yeah.
But we had talked about
the nice thing about that, too, I mean, you could really pull the guilt trip and just get starving Bangladeshis to go and assess your fines, right?
But we had talked about the ombudsman for sexual harassment issues as well.
That's true.
And
it's
something that – I have a couple of things that I think we need to keep in mind. I mean, that's being one of them. The other thing, having a judge meeting before all tournaments as well. But, I mean, this is something that I definitely have on my list of things that I want to see somewhere. And it shouldn't be somebody tabbing, and it shouldn't be the tournament director. It has to be just other people.
It should be Ryan Hamilton with a bat.
Well, it could be a judge. It could be a judge who you could quickly, pull out of a round.
There are plenty of people that I would be perfectly happy putting in this situation, but they can't be functioning as something else in the tournament. That becomes important. That's a good factor to keep in mind with them. Anyhow, what was the other aspect of this shenanigan business?
Well, the shenanigan is also, I mean, the shenanigan is one, I guess I sort of see it as a sheet of paper, both sides of it, right? It's the person filling out the preference
sheet. Okay, so it's the same thing,
But, and mm-hmm. actually, you know, what we talked to, I mean, the discussion that I'm having with some coaches now is, should we find both? Just, you know, both sides get it.
I mean, we have to be really good about making sure that the sheet does get to the judge. I mean, judges tend to be in a different universe sometimes than the rest of the tournament.
I actually think the bigger issue, because I still have no problem holding the person doing the registration responsible and saying ultimately that person has to get to the judge's order, get be knowledgeable. But what actually I think is the bigger issue, and this caused a lot of acrimony at the TFC, but I think the bigger issue is the tournament, if they're going to have a very strict policy, and this is something that I've had already actually thought about at Bronx, so I'm kind of glad Beats is talking about this because it's causing me to think more about this.
You have to enforce it.
Right. It's to have a clear enforcement, but also have a clearly stated list of what conflicts mean. Like, what is a conflict?
Yeah.
And then I think at that point there's no excuse.
Yeah, we talked about this a lot in the TOC community back when I was doing it.
We talked about then, we talked about now, then there was the sheet, you know, some people made fun of the sheet. I didn't really understand why it was so silly. I actually thought it was
the people that make fun of it, the people that make fun of it are the people who also accuse tournaments of being political and everything. But that this the more strict you are about set rules that are set in stone and written, the less political we can be about it. So I have to run because I've got kids waiting to do a practice round. So
may the force be with you.
Okay.
It's come to that. Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to wrap it up then because we've been going on for a while. And Why not?
Very good. Okay.
Pizza's going to go. Okay, guys, take care. We'll do this again in our usual couple of weeks.
Sounds good, Jim. I will see you on Friday.
I hope, if we don't get snowed out.
It's true. Snow is looking a little crazy.
It's not looking
By the way, I hired a photographer for MBA.
Oh, God, I love that.
And I'm going to start doing it at most tournaments because they're really cheap. They're like $50.
I love it.
They're going to take pictures. And I'm
of course you love that, John.
I'm gonna say take pictures not just of, because honestly it's selfish because I never take pictures at tournaments when I should, and I regret not ever getting pictures of Jed, John, and Nick at tournaments or anything like that. I have nothing.
It'd be good to do it.
Documented.
Okay.
But I'm also gonna say just take pictures of everything, and then I'll just share it with everyone that
that's awesome.
Wants.
Sounds good. Okay. Have a good trip. Yeah.
Bye.
All right.